This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com on this 15th day of July 2010. Today, I'm happy to welcome back to the program Daniel Estulin, the researcher and writer behind the international best-selling True Story of the Bilderberg Group and the recently published Shadow Masters, which are both available from Trinday. Daniel Estulin, it's an honor to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me again in your show, James.
Well, it's excellent for you to be here, and it's been about a month and a half since we last talked back at the end of May when you were revealing this year's Bilderberg agenda, and a lot of things have transpired since then, not least of which was, of course, the conference itself. But perhaps we should hear a little bit about your address to European Parliament, what transpired there, and how your speech was received.
It was actually received very, very well. It took place on the 1st of June, a historic event, I think, unprecedented by any standard. Just imagine me standing up in front of a joint session of Congress in the United States and making a speech on the Bilderberg Group. I think, you know, I'll be long dead and buried before that happens. But certainly the speech itself of the European Parliament was very, very well received. I was given about 25 minutes to speak, and the room was full, about 220 people. There were 50 media representatives from 37 countries. It's, again, an unprecedented event. The speech itself can be downloaded from my website, danielestulin.com. I talked about the future of European stability, the idea of what, you know, the Bilderberg concept of not so much one world government, as you and I have often talked about, rather one world company limited, and towards that one world company limited, how that, you know, the financial and the global economic impetus is actually being driven by the forces which we don't usually see on television or in the mainstream press. And I put it all in perspective against this background of what's happening in the world today. And again, on the stage, I was presented by Mario Borghesio, a senior most representative of European Liga Norte from Italy, and also on stage with me sat the representatives of UKIP, British Independent Party, whose leader Nigel Farage unfortunately couldn't make it because he was still recovering from a tragic but not fatal, luckily, airplane crash.
That's right, absolutely, and I hope people will go to your site, danielestulin.com, to check out that speech in its entirety. But right now, I guess we should get to the conference itself, and I note a report on danielestulin.com in which you note that a befitting headline for this year's conference would be, "The World is Out of Timeouts." Explain what you mean by that.
Well, exactly. You know, from the Chinese real estate bubble about to blow, as I said to you a month and a half ago when we talked, you know, to an imminent housing crash in Canada, from the more than expected treasury bubble collapse in the United States, and also to the meltdown in Spain, which is happening as we speak, Greece, Hungary, Portugal, Ireland, Iceland, Italy. You know, the battle lines are being drawn, and needless to say, these battle lines will very much define how humanity, which direction it will actually go over the next few years. Greece, needless to say, was obviously on everyone's mind. But before we actually go to Greece, let's talk a little bit about the United States. You know, in the last few days, again, if you look at the situation in the United States, it's tragic to say the least. You know, the sales of new houses fell about 33% on annual rate, adjusted seasonally to about 300,000 units. Now, this is the lowest number ever registered. The consumer's confidence fell to just under 53 points in June from 62.7 in May. And, you know, the Dallas Fed's gauge of manufacturing activity dropped to minus 4% from 2.9%. The Richmond Fed index fell to 23 from 26. The Philadelphia Fed index fell as well. The Chicago Fed fell. You know, the message here is, and this is, again, one of the Bilderbergers' main concern. I didn't quite understand from our sources inside what they were talking about until actually I looked into the numbers myself. You know, the message is it's not some isolated regional downturn. It's one that's spreading to every corner of the United States. Now, the Economic Cycle Research Institute's weekly leading index is falling off the cliff. Its growth rate just fell to a negative 6.9%, and that's the worst reading in a year, and by far below the high positive of 28.5% way back in October. Now, the last time this index tanked as much, recession struck within a few months, and, you know, what's even worse is that consumer credit in the United States, car loans, credit cards, it shrunk by a massive $9.1 billion in May. That's on top of almost $15 billion decline in April. And that May slump was four times as large as the economists were expecting. So the bottom line is, it's time to brace ourselves for a massive stock decline and a powerful double-dip recession, which is coming towards us, you know, with the speed of a tsunami. And that's all the things that the Bilderbergers were talking about. Again, information we get from our sources, because, again, as I explained to you before, you don't have 120 Bilderberg members meeting all at the same time in one room. They break up into groups of about 20 people and then look at a particular problem from different perspectives, which is why at times it takes a little bit of, you know, of putting the pieces of the puzzle together, because, you know, we'll get a little bit of information from one of our sources at one of these groups, and then we'll get another piece of information from somebody else, you know, who are sitting in another group with another 20 people looking at the same problem from a different perspective. And then what they do is, you know, they meet in the afternoon, they actually look at the different ideas and brainstorming ideas, and they actually put together a common policy. So, but again, the numbers are scary. And what they're telling us is that despite, you know, the biggest economic stimulus package in the United States history, despite near 0% interest rates from the Federal Reserve, despite the biggest bank bailout on record, and the government takeover of every company from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to General Motors, AIG, you know, the economy is sinking yet again, and not only in the United States, but also again in Spain, in Portugal, in Greece, in Italy, in Ireland. You know, what was previously merely the risk of a double-dip recession, as the Bilderbergers themselves have admitted, is fast on its way to becoming a reality. And what's worse, it's happening at the same time as the sovereign debt crisis is gathering steam. You know, the bottom paid for economic recovery, as one of the European Bilderbergers said at the meeting in June in Barcelona, is coming to a close. It's time instead to deal with a very sobering new reality. Again, the double dip is here with all the attendant consequences for stocks, currencies, commodities, people, needless to say, nation, state, republics, and the continent of Europe itself.
That's absolutely right, and this is the absolutely perfectly predictable result of the policy of stimulus that was holding sway over the G20 countries over the past couple of years. And now, of course, they've pulled the rug out on that, and they're switching over to the age of painful austerity. And we had further vindication of that, the fact that things are heading in that direction from this year's G20. So break down in a little bit more detail. You're right there in the belly of the beast in Spain that's falling apart as we speak, and you talk about Canadian housing collapse and other things. Tell us about some of the details.
Well, you know, I'd like to start with Greece, because that's, you know, that's a perfect example. It's something that everybody understands, or at least knows about or heard of, you know, from watching television or reading the mainstream publications. You know, the viral, again, sovereign debt contagion is spreading like wildfire throughout the Eurozone. But as one Bilderberger admitted, if the Greeks get bailed out, then who's next? And where the heck is all the bailout money going to come from? Now, the policymakers may need to come up with almost $800 billion to save these struggling economies. Actually, these numbers have just been adjusted to over $1.2 trillion. Spain's hole is bigger than any black hole known, you know, in the universe. And as the problem, said one French Bilderberger, is that nobody has that kind of money laying around, so it'll have to be borrowed. And if it has to be borrowed from a European bond market that's already falling apart at the seams, what's likely to happen? And of course, all agreed that even more selling, which would drive bond prices down and interest rates up. Also, the newly anointed Tsar of Europe, Herman Van Rompuy and company, they got away with a very illegal operation in Greece when the European Community approved this bailout of a Euro member state, which is a breach, of course, of the Monetary Union's guiding principles, according to the 1992 Maastricht Treaty. But, you know, needless to say, they won't be able to do this again, because everyone is onto them. And most of all, again, the people who've been supporting and sponsoring me at the European Parliament, Borghesio and Liga Norte, who have been after Barroso, who have been after Van Rompuy to explain their participation at the Bilderberg Conference. And to this point in time, none of them have actually come out and publicly stated whether they attended this year's conference or not. Still, the question remains, and it remains not only on our minds, but also on the minds of the Bilderbergers, you know, will the Eurozone survive, as, you know, you and I talked before the conference, and as they discussed during the conference? And as one Bilderberger asked, you know, there are several strategies on the table. Now, one of these strategies would force weaker, financially challenged members to temporarily forfeit the European membership. Again, as you and I talked before the Bilderberger meeting, because as one German Bilderberger pointed out, that if it becomes obvious that a Greek euro is not monetarily equal to a German euro, which needless to say it is not, then the monetary union cannot survive. And the Germans and the French and the Dutch, you know, they put in a lot of stock over the last 50 years plus to actually get this, you know, economic union to actually work, and they won't stand, you know, for, you know, deadbeat members such as Spain and Portugal and Italy and, you know, and Greece, pigs, as they call it. That's a nice way to call your, you know, your member state, to actually stand in the way of getting their, you know, super international one world company limited. So that's where we're at with Greece.
All right, and moving along to other areas of Europe?
Well, you know, one of the, needless to say, the motor of European economy, Germany, and Angela Merkel, the Germans have learned their lessons over the past, going back to the First World War the 1923 crisis in Germany, the Second World War, the Versailles Pact, how Helmut Kohl was pressured by Margaret Thatcher and George H.W. Bush and Mitterrand, actually pressured and threatened into actually accepting the euro instead of a Deutschmark against his better judgment. And so Merkel is actually, she's doing her best to make sure that now that Germany is in the position that it is in, they simply are not willing, to be paying out and being the banker for all these deadbeat countries. So what the German government is, they're determined not to be the paymasters for Europe's debt transgressors in the long term. Now, officials at the Chancellery and Finance Ministry fear that otherwise the German public's support for the euro and the European community would be undermined. And also, not only that, but actually there's a couple of court cases being brought up in front of the Supreme Court in Germany. If actually that goes through, Germany itself may not have to participate and actually be able to leave Europe from, I'm actually trying to find the exact term and the exact name of the case amongst my papers, and I can't find it right now. Anyway, so fearing a lasting burden on taxpayers, the German government is preparing a set of insolvency rules for the countries in the Eurozone. And again, these are some of the things which were discussed after the Bilderberg Conference ended on the 6th of June. A small clique of top Bilderbergers, they went off to this super private hotel in Gerona, that's northern Catalonia, about 40 miles north of Barcelona, and then continued until Wednesday, that's for another 3.5 days, discussing exactly how some of these ideas of creating this, what you and I talked about before, two-tier Europe, will be orchestrated and will be presented to the media. And one of the ideas that has come out of that meeting and is being actually put forth through the private channels for now by the German government is it would require private investors to bear some of the financial burden and force the affected countries to give up some sovereignty. Now imagine that if you're Greece, if you're Spain, if you want to actually pay your bills, you're going to have to give up some of your sovereignty. How do you see that?
It's ridiculous, but that's absolutely fascinating what you just revealed. So what you're saying is that in fact there was a sort of a secretive Bilderberg after Bilderberg.
Well, it's actually, it's not the first time. They usually do it a lot, especially in times of crisis. You have the inner circle, the top 20, 30 members who actually continue discussing, because again, as I said to you before, the out of the 120 attendees, a very small number of people actually understand that there's an organized structure behind Bilderbergers, and it's not just some debating society of, out-of-work former government employees. Now, going back to Germany, the first national bankruptcy on European soil, which, needless to say, I'm talking about Greece, was only prevented because the remaining countries in the Eurozone came to the aid of the faltering fellow member with billions in loans and loan guarantees. Now, the Chancellor, Angela Merkel, that is, she's determined not to allow the Greek debacle to be repeated elsewhere. And, of course, by elsewhere, she means exactly Spain and exactly Portugal. And Spain's debt is actually three times as much as Greek's debt. And if they needed $750 billion to save Greece, imagine how much money they need to save Spain. That's one of the reasons about 3 weeks ago you had the second-in-command of the United States Treasury, you had the president of the European Central Bank, the members of the International Monetary Fund, all coming to Spain to discuss with the president Zapatero exactly how this, the survival plan is going to be put forward, because needless to say, what they want to know is, how Zapatero and Spain are going to pay back the monies that they can actually borrow, because needless to say, a lot of the Bilderberger members agree that Greece simply won't be able to pay the debts, and they'll most likely will default on their loans. And again, the Chancellor, she's determined not to allow the what happened in Greece to be repeated in Spain and in Portugal. And what she's proposed is the establishment of a procedure to ensure what she calls orderly national bankruptcies. Now, Merkel hopes that the plan would create an important incentive for the Eurozone members to keep their budgets under control. Again, some unprecedented developments. Before, again, we had nation-state republics. with our flags, our currencies, our constitutions. Now you have this one, you know, super European state called European Community. And now within this European Community, you have this two-tier Europe, you know, the first division, you know, the top echelon, you know, the richest of the rich. And then you have the great unwashed nation version, Spain's and Portugal's. And then within these Spain's and the Portugal's, they're saying, well, if you want some money, you have to give up your firstborn child or some of your freedoms. Imagine where we are today.
Absolutely. Well, imagine that, the global economic meltdown being used as an excuse to centralize power. Who would have predicted that? Yeah. Well, okay. So a lot of analysts were really surprised by the UK siding with the Europeans against the Americans at the G20 for the austerity, the round of austerity that they want to bring in. The Americans were arguing for continued stimulus. Was that break something that was discussed at Bilderberg?
Well, you know, what we're seeing right now, and again, especially people, you know, in the old days, in the days of the Soviet Union, you know, and the evil empire, so to speak, you had the you know, American experts and, you know, in Russian foreign policy, you know, who'd read the Pravda and, you know, by reading, a three-line a quote on page 16, they could tell you exactly what Russia's foreign policy is going to be over the next, 6 months or so. Well, you know, for anybody who's actually watching very carefully the geopolitical tectonic plates, you could tell right now how dangerous and how grave the situation is, because, you know, these old, you know, former lasting, you know, friendships between Americans and the British and the French and the Israelis, and, you know, that no longer is the case. You know, I can tell you from my experiences in Africa, in places like Sudan, America's, you know, their enemy in Sudan is the Israelis, and the Israelis are fighting the British, and the British are fighting the Russians, and the Russians are the Chinese, and they're all fighting for the same, you know, piece of land that has oil. And it's the same thing at the G20 meeting, it's the same thing that happened at the G8. It's the idea that every member for himself is just trying to save their own hides. You know, they're no longer interested because they simply can't afford these temporary partnerships for profit or for loss in this particular case, because they don't know if it's going to be, you know, if this, you know, down cycle is going to come around in time for, you know, for UK in this particular case, you know, to reap some benefit of the, you know, of giving up their national interests in favor of the United States, which is why, again, it's not surprising at all why Germany, you know, has broken with France, and although France and Sarkozy are threatening Germany, Germany is saying, hey, you know, we're looking after our, you know, number one, which is Germany in this particular case. UK is doing the same thing. Even Canada and Harper, who is basically, you know, an Obama lackey, who's just a George W. Bush lackey, you know, from the Calgary School, which is the same as Chicago School of Economics, you know, he very much said to them, you know, bugger off. You know, we're going to go and we're going to do what's best for our country, because all of these nations are terrified of the consequences. You know, they're seeing in the United States, people are rising up and saying to the politicians, we're going to kill you, you know, and they simply don't want the same to happen, you know, in their countries.
Exactly. Well, I could talk with you about this for hours, but I know you have to get going very shortly here. So before you go, I wanted to ask about a potential golden nugget in your Bilderberg report. You say, quote, another Bilderberger reminded the attendees of what happened on May 6, 2010 to the Dow Jones when it collapsed 10% in 16 minutes, wiping out $700 billion. It was not a fluke, end quote. Do you have any other info about that and what was discussed?
Well, yes, I do. And, you know, because our brains work fairly well, you know, most of the time, you know, when somebody tells you that the markets need to drop 10% in 60 minutes because someone somewhere pressed, you know, a wrong key in a computer terminal, you know, I mean, you have to be, you know, as we say in Russian, not on very friendly terms with your brain to actually believe this nonsense. Because, you know, imagine you go into the bathroom to brush your teeth, you come out and the world has collapsed. You know, it actually, you know, the magic word is the derivatives. Now, the root of the problem are the super banks and a dramatic increase in derivative market trading. Now, derivatives are highly speculative, high-risk financial instruments, which combined with unchecked regulatory safeguards have contributed the most to the destruction of the world's economy. Now, at the end of 2009, there were $294 trillion in derivatives at the United States banks, according to the OCC, which is the Office of Control of the Currency. Now, few government institutions will admit that the financial bailout in the United States has been intended to protect those derivatives. So that's a surprise. Now, you know, neither are they willing to admit that the current debt can never be repaid, which is the same thing, you know, Bilderberg was saying about Greece. What we just gave or can never be paid back. They're just living literally on borrowed time. Bilderberg, European Central Bank, European Union, Federal Reserve, and the rest of the global financial institutions and governments know this and feel extremely vulnerable. And as one of them admitted at the conference, if European public finds out, we are screwed. Literally, that was the phrase. Now, he was explicitly referring to the Federal Reserve's participation in the European bailout by flooding Europe with dollars. That would make sense. Derivative contracts are settled in dollars, and the ability to cancel, settle, or restructure derivatives contracts is of utmost importance to the banking speculators. The Fed's actions are a giveaway of their game plan and the nature of the crisis. I said to you before, experts on Soviet foreign policy reading a three-line extract, page 16, and they know exactly where that policy is going. So in the United States, you have four mega banks which dominate lending in what amounts to a financial cartel. Now, these banks, of course, are Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo. And their combined assets amount to almost $8 trillion. That's more than 10 times their assets 15 years ago. Now, the big four banks now control over 40% of all the deposits in the United States banking system, half of the mortgages, and two-thirds of the credit cards issued in the United States. You know, what we're witnessing right now in the early the 21st century, consolidation like of the U.S. banking system, and giving the system meltdown of the system itself, the remaining 8,000 banks, only half will survive this particular carnage, further consolidating the banking system into the hands of the largest banking houses. And again, it goes back to the idea of control and derivatives, which were the speculative instruments invented after the 1987 financial collapse, and exacerbated by in 1999 the Glass-Steagall Act was wiped out, basically mimicking, turning all the banks, commercial banks, into these giant casinos. And what we have today is this: you have derivatives on top of derivatives, divided and multiplied by derivatives, and the people who control the world have lost control of the system. And it's literally, you have a juggler who has 15 glasses full of wine on top of each other, and is trying to juggle them all at the same time, defining gravity. And when the markets fell 10% in 16 minutes on the 6th of May, that was like four glasses out of this, lot of 30 glasses in the man's hand just, crashed to the ground. And they simply can't control the rest. It's just a matter of time before the rest of them collapse. Everyone knows this, and of course they know this. And the sooner people find out, the sooner we actually may be able to save the world economy. Unfortunately, I think people are simply not interested or simply too stupid to understand what's going on.
Absolutely. They keep inflating the bubble, and it's going to burst at some point. It's just a question of when. So what's the next domino to fall or the next shoe to drop?
I think the Treasury bond market, that's pretty much the next shoe or the last shoe. Just as we thought we're out of the financial bubble woods, a new bubble is starting to burst. Now, that's the Treasury bond market and the corresponding surge in interest rates. Now, the very latest data suggests the day of reckoning is fast approaching. This is no longer some theoretical potential future event. It is a crisis that could strike with deadly force at literally any time. As of the year end 2009, there were almost $35 trillion of United States government, corporate, municipal, and other bonds outstanding. By comparison, the entire market capitalization of the broad Wilshire 5000 total market index for stocks is just under $14 trillion. Translation, the United States bond market is 2.5 times the size of the United States stock market. And among the categories of bonds outstanding, the United States has almost $3 trillion of municipal securities and $2.4 trillion of bonds backed by credit cards, auto loans, and similar assets. Again, the next bubble to drop is the Treasury bond market. And when that goes, I don't even want to think what's going to happen.
No one does, but I think we're unfortunately going to find out one way or another. Well, Daniel Eshelin, I guess we're just about out of time. Any final thought you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
I think, there's still a lot to cover, and information is still coming in fast and furious from the Bilderberg meeting. There's still a lot to cover. Spain is on death row, and that's just a question. Dead men walking, that's what Spain is. It's just a question of how quickly it's going to collapse. They have the State of the Union debate yesterday between the two leading parties, and they're basically calling, for elections 2 years ahead of time. And the way the situation is right now, it's very, very likely that they're going to call an early election. If they do, you're going to have a minority government, which means you're going to have even more, you know, even greater lack of stability. And on top of that, you know, the Catalonians have finally received a favorable to them court sentencing from the from the Spanish Supreme Court about the nature of what Catalonia means as a nation, which means that, you know, we're back to where Canada was back in 1995 when Quebec was about to separate. And I remember that very, very well because I was right in the middle of it. And had it not been for my information, for my sources, we might not be actually talking about Canada right now, but rather talking about North America and Quebec as two separate nations. So there's a lot on the plate. And unfortunately, you know, the people in, you know, on the other side of the field, the Bilderbergers and their cohorts, they're not so much in the driving seat as they, you know, as they had hoped. And unfortunately, you know, we don't have much control of the situation either. And I don't think anybody really does. So there's, again, you have the bond market, you have the stock market, you have the Greece, Spain, Portugal, you know, the United States. You know, the Germans are making all the right noises for themselves. So it's a mess. The world is a mess. You know, but Spain won the world football championship. So, you know, as two big fat guys said, I was in a bar having breakfast the day after. You know, these two big fat guys, and one of them couldn't even close his legs. He was so fat. And he said, yeah, we're the champions. Pause. And then he said, now what? Exactly. Now what? And that's where we're at.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up in one anecdote. Well, absolutely. There is just way too much to cover, and there's still so much happening right now that, of course, you're welcome back.
It's been about 3 weeks or so, and I'll definitely fill you in on the rest of the information.
All right.
From what my sources tell me.
Excellent. Well, please do. You're welcome back anytime you want. And so thank you again for taking the time today.
Take care.